Hello, Spanish history fans, and welcome to another episode of Spanish History 101, where we try to untangle this complex subject so that you can get a general idea, a pretty good idea of just what took place in this country in its past, and hopefully this will help you understand present-day Spain. We are now moving full steam ahead into the 19th century, and the first 15 years has had a lot already happen. The French under Napoleon invaded the country and tried to take it over. The Spanish rebelled and, with the help of the British and the Portuguese, managed to force the French out. This, if you recall, was known as the Peninsular War internationally and also the Spanish War of Independence. And depending on how you looked at it, it basically started in 1807, others say 1808, and it went on until 1814. By that year, 1814, that is, a new king had been installed. This was Fernando VII, known originally with the cognomen of the Desired One, since many saw him as the answer to many of this country's woes. But we will see very soon in this episode that it couldn't have been farther from the truth. In fact, he would end up being known, probably more accurately, as Spain's felon king or criminal king. Fernando consistently ranks at the top of Spain's lists of worst monarchs. And while these things are always subject to debate, he had some pretty stiff competition there in this category. A strong case can be made for this assertion. Now, here's a quick summary leading up to his reign. If you recall, in March of 1808, Fernando's father, King Carlos IV, abdicated and let Fernando take over as the new king. Napoleon was not happy with this decision, and he called the entire family up to France to make some other decisions. And in late April and May of 1808, Napoleon tells them both to abdicate, that is, he asked Fernando to abdicate in favor of his father, Carlos IV, and then he asked Carlos IV to abdicate in favor of Napoleon's brother, Joseph, who would become Joseph I of Spain. Joseph actually had some pretty interesting ideas that were similar to the French Revolution or those that came from that period. But basically, his reign was a total disaster because most people didn't want him there. That led to the Spanish War of Independence, which went from 1808 to 1814. And during this period, in 1812, Spain ratified its first constitution, which is referred to affectionately as the PEPA. It was passed in Cádiz, which is a city in the south of Spain, and happened to be the only city to resist Napoleon's forces. The French finally left in 1814, but by the end of 1813, Fernando had been proclaimed king, where he originally promised to support and respect the constitution, but a few months later, in May 1814, he changed his mind and pretty much abolished the constitution and then went on a six-year reign of terror to a certain degree, persecuting liberals and trying to restrict many of the rights and freedoms that the constitution, in theory, guaranteed. This split decision pretty much represents the dichotomy of opinions that would dominate Spain, or that has dominated Spain from here on in. There were some who were highly in favor of modernizing Spain and others who yearned for the way things were done before. Fernando soon expressed his preference for the latter, that is, the old regime where the king was the absolute ruler. So for the next 6 years, rights and special freedoms were restricted and the opposition was persecuted. And even the Inquisition, which actually had been abolished, was sort of reinstated unofficially. Spain went through a period of serious economic problems, so it was a bad time for the country. On the other hand, there was opposition, It was backed by most of the liberals in the country, and they put up a lot of resistance. In fact, on no fewer than three occasions, they tried to overthrow the government. These were coups known as pronunciamientos. All of those three had failed, but the fourth time round in 1820, a military officer named Riego, R-I-E-G-O, succeeded in forcing the king to accept the terms and conditions of the Constitution. And after that, we had the beginning of a three-year liberal period when the rights and freedoms were restored and the liberal governments could be formed. However, in 1823, the conservative rulers of Europe, mostly the crowned rulers, led by France's Louis XVIII, threatened to invade Spain with an alleged force of 100,000 troops known as the Sons of St. Louis. St. Louis was the patron of France. So with this support, Fernando VII returned to the throne, actually for the third time. Once again, he originally accepted the conditions of the Constitution, but once he was in power, he reasserted his absolute power and began another period of persecutions and restrictions, and this was known as the Ominous Decade. There was a lot of repression at first, although in the end, in the final years, it seems as if Fernando began to lighten up a little bit. Regardless, we are once again talking about that traditional Spain and the modernizing Spain clashing over what they thought the country should be like. And for the moment, it was traditional Spain that was winning out. But this was a vision whose days were numbered. Many parts of the world were moving forward. Democracy, or at least democratic ideas, were slowly but surely taking over. And the old world, the old way of doing things, would try to fight and hang on, but little by little, they would have to give in. In Spain's case, though, it would take a very long time and cost many, many lives. And as I've mentioned in the previous, or at least I mentioned in the previous episode, this period also saw the essential collapse of the once mighty and immense Spanish Empire. These independence movements started all the way back in 1808, while Spain was experiencing its own period of turmoil. They were probably taking advantage of that. And so these regional governments known as juntas were established. The first was created in Mexico in August of 1808, and it was followed by other juntas created in countries like Uruguay, Bolivia, Argentina, Paraguay, Venezuela, Colombia, and Peru. After that, they took greater steps to complete the process, and most of the future countries declared independence. Now, this is a very complex situation, a very complex history, with Spain, to some degree, trying to hold on to its possessions, although it's very difficult because it really doesn't have the means to do so. And then in these countries, you have royalists who are trying to be loyal to the Spanish crown, and then you have a large portion of the population wanting to break away. On top of that, international intervention also proved key, as countries like Great Britain, France, and the United States were more than happy to further weaken Spain's position in the Americas. The independence side eventually won out, and by 1823, most of Spain's possessions in America had become independent, with the only territories staying on of note being Cuba and Puerto Rico. Spain would not begin to sign treaties to recognize these countries and renew ties with them until the 1830s. And finally, like with all kings, the worry, the concern of guaranteeing a successor weighed heavily on Fernando's legacy. Fernando married four times. The first three wives died without an heir. Many had children, but they died when they were kids. So finally, Maria Cristina of the Two Sicilies, his final wife, who happened to be his niece, also gave birth to two daughters, one being the future Queen of Spain, Isabella II, or Isabel II. It's often been said that one reason Fernando had difficulty having children was that he reportedly had a very large, almost deformed reproductive organ, making coitus especially complicated for him and especially his spouse or spouses. In fact, a special cushion had to be fashioned to buffer the distance between the two and thus make sexual relations possible. In any event, he did manage to have a child, but it was a girl and not a boy. And since the Bourbons believed in Salic law, which prohibited a woman from ruling a country, a crisis erupted. According to Salic law, Fernando's brother Carlos would be the next in line. But Fernando made public an agreement that his father, King Carlos IV, had come up with 40 years before in the late 18th century, and it was known as the Pragmatic Sanction. The problem was that it was an agreement that wasn't made known to the courts. So there was some debate about that, but that is what Fernando had used to make his daughter Isabella the next queen. In 1832, when Fernando appeared to be on his deathbed, one of the pro-Carlos people, that is Carlos's brother, an advisor persuaded him to repeal the Pragmatic Sanction, and when it was believed that Fernando had died, it was announced that the Salic Law was back and in effect, and that Carlos the brother, would be the king. But then Fernando pulled an old, "I'm not dead yet," and when he was feeling better and had recovered, repealed the Salic law again in favor of his daughter Isabel. That should have settled the matter, but instead it triggered a conflict that would last 40 or 50 years, and one we will have to go into greater detail in the future. But we will get to that in the next episodes. And that'll be all for today's episode of Spanish History 101. We hope you've enjoyed it. Please leave us any questions or comments because we love the feedback. You can subscribe to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, and Castos. And if you want, you can also check us out on our YouTube channel and subscribe. If you wish to support Brian's Spain domain, we'd greatly appreciate it. We work very hard to provide you with the best information about Spain, Spanish history, and Spanish culture. You can do so by clicking on our PayPal donate button on our website, or if you want to have access to absolutely all of our podcasts and support us regularly, you can check us out on Patreon at the link provided below. Stay well, stay safe, and hasta pronto.